Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Welcome to the 9 a.m. hour of Montana Talks here on New Year's Eve, baby. Getting ready to go into 2026. This is John Jackson sitting in for Aaron Flint. And we have again here at the mic, once again, the lovely and talented Jody Etchart, Montana legislator extraordinaire. I know you got way more on this topic of healthcare you want to get into. What's the next thing you want to talk about?
Well, I want to talk a little bit about how much we spend nationally on Medicaid. And then I'm not talking about fraud. I'm talking about payment error rate measurement, which is PERM, P-E-R-M, payment error rate measurement. It's not necessarily fraud, but it's how the states determine eligibility. And yes, people can misrepresent their income, or they can apply in multiple states and they can be, we'll just say misrepresenting themselves. And so I'm not talking about states and fraud. So I'm not talking necessarily about Minnesota. I'm talking about the error rate. And the federal government requires that your error rate in states is less than 3%. Montana currently has an error rate of 12%. And you've heard other states, you've seen this, where states have these huge error rates. And is it Massachusetts? It's somebody. And they're refusing to give the federal government their reports. And they're refusing to do an audit on why they have such a high error rate. So I just want to kind of touch on the error rates. In Montana, we're at 12%, and we need to be at 3. And so Montana is doing everything they can. There's a different plan that they have where you turn over your information to the feds and you can get audited. And then finally, after multiple different levels of the feds escalating, they're trying to get you to get your error rates, they can pull your funding. So we're pretty far away from that in Montana. And our DPHS does an excellent job, and they're really trying to reduce that error rate. But so the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, they can increase your oversight, do targeted audits. They can do eligibility reviews if they figure that the state's not doing it. But when you think about almost $900 billion annually in Medicaid payments and spending, if we can decrease that error rate by 1% annually, the error rate's 3%. Some states are at 23%. It's huge. That's $9 billion annually per 1%. We can fix that error rate. So when we can do eligibility redeterminations, which the One Big Beautiful Bill is requiring eligibility determinations twice yearly, it's also trying to make it so that states actually talk, so that people can't get Medicaid in Montana and Wyoming. So when we talk about the PERM rate, the error rate, and we decrease that error rate, think about how much money we can save to go to other areas and people in need.
I want to get back to this in a second about what causes that error rate and what is the Trump administration actually, in reality, going to do about it.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
We were talking about that error rate, and I really wanted Jody to tell everybody what is causing this error rate. What's responsible for this?
Well, I don't want to call it fraud because I really don't think that most states are frauding the federal government out of things. I would say that it's due to improper payments or improper payments caused by eligibility determination errors or documentation errors. And then you have to say, where do those eligibility errors come from? And where do the documentation errors come from? So during COVID, states were not allowed to remove anybody from Medicaid roles. So in other words, even if you tried to get off because you said, I have a job, my income requirements don't meet Medicaid requirements anymore, the federal government did not allow states to remove anybody from the Medicaid rolls. And so then that's why you saw Montana go through all the eligibility redeterminations, and the left was all mad because you're kicking all these people off Medicaid. Well, you're not kicking anybody off Medicaid. You're removing the people that are no longer eligible because you weren't able to do eligibility requirements in COVID under the Biden administration. So the other thing that happened, let's say somebody's on Medicaid in Montana and that person moves. They move to Wyoming. Usually they tell Montana, hey, I moved. But now they're getting Medicaid payments from both from Wyoming and Montana. So there's where you're looking at your eligibility determinations and the accidental double dipping because the feds wouldn't allow anybody to come off.
And you're saying this 12% error rate, this is what's been found. You wonder how much of it out there they don't even know about, right? Calculate that. I mean, I bet you it's another, again, I bet you it goes up to 20, 25%.
You're probably right. That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point.
That's just what's being discovered. That's what's just on the books.
Right. But the other thing with this, John, is that so many different states aren't opening their books to the feds to fix this. And, you know, fix it. And because here's the thing is, you can fix it with increased oversight. The feds can come in and help you with your audits and help you with your redetermination. They can help you with the computer system that you're using to get your error rates down. But even that's just Medicaid we're talking about. What about SNAP error rates? And SNAP is administered by the USDA, but in Montana we're currently 8.9, and the feds require that you're below 6% on your SNAP rate. So really Montana's doing great with that, and we're working with the feds to make sure that all of our error rates under Medicaid get below the 3% and our SNAP gets below the 6%. So Montana's working with it. But what about all the states that aren't? Because you've seen Minnesota, where the feds took away all payments unless Undersecretary of James O'Neill yesterday announced that they are removing the payments to Minnesota for all the daycare stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you have to. Like we talked about in the previous segment. If it's like you come up on this in your neighborhood, a fire hydrant open, spraying water everywhere. Are you going to go get a bucket and start trying to? No, you're going to go turn it off. And that's what you can't, God forbid, you want to try to turn off something, turn off a spigot somewhere of federal dollars, our dollars, going out the fire hydrant. That's when you hear these people squeal. Like, did you hear about that? You were talking about the Minnesota stuff and the SNAP benefits. They got these Somalis up there that have a grocery store right beside their restaurant. They get the EBT benefits to buy groceries from themselves and take it right over to their restaurant, which they then sell to people. They're double dipping. They're using our money to fund their restaurant.
Exactly. And that would be a little bit different. That's what I would call absolutely outright fraud. But that's not what the states are doing with the PERM, those and the documentation errors and the eligibility errors. That person that's getting those is probably not giving the state exactly what they need or giving them misrepresented documentation to
that's
get
fraud.
On it.
Yeah, you're being nice about it. That's fraud, though. That you know that's what they're doing, right?
Right. But that's not the state's fault when
somebody's
misrepresenting themselves to the state.
But it goes back into the question, how do they end up finding out about it? How do they end up knowing that? And what are the documents required? Because like we were talking about at the break, you've got to show that W-2 once a year. And then if it's biannual reporting, what's the mid-year reporting? What do you have to do with, what documentation do you have to show then?
It's probably on your honor. I actually don't know.
Yeah, on your honor. Yeah. How's that working out? That's right. You just know that every bit of this money that's offered out there is going to be stolen. If, first of all, you don't have the guardrails on it, and then you're never making examples of people. People that get caught in these errors, in big quotes, their money's never turned off, and they're never prosecuted for it. So everybody just learns. These entire communities learn that, hey, we can steal this money, and even if we get caught, they won't do anything about it.
That's true. Yeah, that's where you get... It's an honor system. You are only good as your word. You only have your word. You have nothing else. So in Montana, though, we are doing the very best we can to work with people, make sure everybody that requires or needs coverage is covered, and our DPHHS does really an excellent job given the constraints of that massive amount of eligibility requirements that they have to go through.
Well, that's a big recommendation from you that you think they're doing that great job. That goes a long way.
Broadcasting live across the big sky, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
We are getting a master class today. If you're listening to Montana Talks this morning, you are getting an absolute crash course, master course in everything healthcare. From the expert, Ms. Jody Etchart, what is your next topic?
Next topic is this. Do people realize that after Obamacare, how much money insurance companies made? So people are all upset now that we're cutting Obamacare and we're cutting the subsidies for Obamacare. But after Obamacare became law, and especially after the implementation, health insurer stock rose faster in the S&P 500 and any other insurance sector. And the biggest acceleration occurred after the subsidies stabilized the revenue. So when the ACA, Obamacare, guaranteed insurers a large federally subsidized customer base, those insurers became much more profitable and much less exposed to market risk. So this isn't controversial. Wall Street already openly acknowledges this. So the one thing that's clear from this data is that the biggest financial winners from Obamacare subsidies have been insurance companies.
Well, there you go. And you remember how the left was cheering when that kid murdered the head of United Healthcare up there in New York? Remember how they were cheering it on out there, clapping that he murdered the head of this evil insurance company? But then they're turning around right now and wanting to continue to give you billions to these same insurance companies. It's, Jody, follow me on this. It's almost if they don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Oh, can you say that again? Times 10?
It's almost if, right?
If?
Yeah, well, I've got a question for you. And I've said this, you know, for weeks now. I tell you, that's going to be a dividing line for me, this thing with Obamacare and this bailout. And I refuse to call it a subsidy. This is a bailout, and it's a future. It's the expansion of the Borg all across our country. Get more and more and more people on government aid. That's all it is, on government programs. Get more, and it keeps expanding. It's like this giant monster. It's like the blob. Well, Republicans have campaigned on ever since Obamacare went in to get rid of it. They had it this close back in Trump's administration, and we had the traitor John McCain vote us down and sentence us all to how many more years of Obamacare. And now Joe Biden and the Democrats came in here in 2021 and used the COVID spending to get this again expansion of Obamacare, and it ran out because they only did it for 4 years, so it's run out on them. And Donald Trump and the Republicans, you know, were willing to let the government shut down for 6 weeks because they said we're not doing this. Himself personally and Mike Jensen, the Speaker of the House, said this over and over again: we're not doing it. But I tell you, Jody, I got this feeling they're going to come back here in January and they're going to do some kind of kick the can thing where they're going to, we're going to kick it down the road. We're going to give it one more year of this bailout and then we're going to have a plan. Right? What's your take?
I hear what you're saying, and I understand your skepticism. However, we have to do something about this or we lose the midterms. And if we lose the midterms, it's over. Maybe that's an exaggeration, but here's a couple things where I optimistically disagree with you, because there's another thing where you see where there's from 3 to 12 million people just in the last few years with Obamacare had zero medical claims for an entire year. So when you look and you see, you went from 3 million people having no medical claims to all of a sudden 12 million people on Obamacare having no claims. Where did that come from? Did those people even know that they were insured? Maybe not.
3 minute stations,
but
3 minutes to your next.
One of the things that to keep in mind with that is that those people on, did they even know that they had Obamacare? Did they even know they were enrolled in there? But who was getting that subsidy? Even though they didn't make a medical claim, John, those insurance companies were still getting that federally funded subsidy for those 12 million people who didn't make a claim under Obamacare.
See, I get what you're saying, and don't get me started on that whole midterm thing, because I remember hearing last summer, everybody start talking about midterms. And we're 5 months in. We're 5 months into their term. And we want to start talking about midterms. It's like, no. You have to prove to me that you deserve to be reelected before I'm reelecting you. We're not just doing that whole thing. Now, I think Donald Trump has changed that whole thing. I'm not just out here pulling the lever for Republicans anymore. You're going to have to show me some results. And you're talking about the midterms. See, there's all that. That's the excuse that we're fed every year. Every time we think we're going to do something, they kick that can to a point to where, you know, now it's going to be into January, and oh my gosh, we have the midterms here in 11 months. We can't, you know, we can't do anything. So there's always an excuse. It's always, we'll get them tomorrow. And, Creedence Clearwater Revival, tomorrow never comes.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but I really do have a lot of faith in this, because the other thing is we're attacking fraud. We're attacking ineligible payments and things like that. And the other thing is that Republicans have a better talking point. They're getting their talking points across and showing how much money insurance companies are making. I mean, I just told you that the insurance stock prices went up higher than the S&P 500. And the problem with it is people see how expensive healthcare is, and then they're going, wait a second, the insurance company's getting all that money? Why aren't I getting money to be able to utilize direct primary care, to be able to utilize the point-of-care testing at my local pharmacy that now, from Montana Talks this morning with John Jackson, I heard I can actually go and have my kids strep tested at the pharmacy.
That's cool, yeah.
So I think people know what's going on, and when they understand that the money that they could be getting for their own health care is going to the insurance company, I think it's going to change. Because the other thing is, the insurance subsidies we're talking about cutting is only 3.3% attributable to COVID-era credits. So it's only 3.3%. And what you can see, even though it's huge increases, it's due to insurer price decisions. It's due to the pharmacy benefit management groups we talked about. It's due to so many different things. And those healthcare costs have to come down, or our healthcare system is going to break. We really are at the breaking point. Hospitals, with the increased regulation, can't make any money. The insurance companies are keeping all of the money. Insurance companies really need to be targeted and fixed. And I'm not saying regulations or that we shouldn't have a capitalistic society, but insurance companies are the problems, because they're the ones that created this PBM, ripping off $2 billion from the people in the state of Montana, increasing your prescription costs.
And that's, you're talking about what you're saying is going to collapse. Think about your private business. Your business out here, your hardware store, your franchise, whatever it is. If that's how the free market contains itself and regulates itself. It's self-regulating, because if you don't offer the correct product at good prices and good customer service, you're going to collapse. You're going out of business. But the government never goes out of business. We never hold the government to that same level of responsibility where it, when it's time for you, because of your inefficiency and corruption, when it's time for you to go into bankruptcy, never happens. So then if we never hold them to that account, like I said, it's just this blob that never stops. And there's always an excuse of why we can't stop the blob.
Sure. I hear you. One of the things I think that needs to happen is I think hospitals really need to come out against some of these insurance companies, because the hospitals charge a lot more for a product than the insurance company is willing to pay, because they have to elevate their costs so they get paid anything. But it's the hospital's problem with how they need to learn the art of the deal that, like, President Trump talks about, because they're the ones, the hospitals are ones that make the contracts with the insurance companies with what they're going to get paid. And I think that the insurance companies must have some amazing deal makers, because the hospitals don't get paid oftentimes what they need to even cover a case. Or if a doctor does a hip surgery, they're not getting covered what they need. The doctor's not getting it. The hospital might be getting a little bit more, but there's just so much bureaucracy, so much red tape, so much regulation that's just unneeded. Somebody just needs to really, in my opinion, just about gut the whole system and make it better so that people get excellent care. But people get excellent care because we have excellent people in positions giving good care. But I don't really know how much longer it can last.
And you talked a minute ago about the money going to the insurance companies rather than the people. You've heard Donald Trump talk about that for months. And that is his position, and I've heard other Republicans say that. It's like, we want to give whatever money that we want to put out there, we're tired of giving it right to the insurance companies. We want to give it to the people. But see, what I want to see Donald Trump do, just like you saw Barack Obama do and Joe Biden do, is don't just tell me at a rally or on True Social that you want this thing. Tell the Congress that this is what we're doing, or I'm vetoing it. You know, it's not just this idea that then I'm going to cave on later. To tell them straight up, if I'm not, I'm going to veto any further actual Obamacare bailout.
Certainly, because did you know that 87% of Obamacare premium revenue comes from taxpayers? Taxpayers subsidize Obamacare 87%. Only 13% of people that use the marketplace pay for their premiums. And then when you look at that and you say, oh, it's because those people fall below that level of threshold where they need funding. No, no, no. If you look at it, there's people at 500% of the federal poverty level making $150,000 a year that are getting taxpayer subsidies for their insurance.
Lord, I mean, a cesspool, an absolute cesspool. And, you know, here's the thing about it, Jody. It's like everywhere you turn in every subject is a cesspool.
This is where Montana Talks Ag with Lane Nordlund.
Yesterday, U.S. Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins signed a new memorandum outlining future priorities for USDA-funded research and development with a renewed focus on putting farmers and ranchers first. The plan shifts federal research dollars towards practical solutions aimed at improving farm profitability, expanding domestic and international markets, and strengthening the long-term resilience of U.S. agriculture. USDA says future research will emphasize reducing input costs, advancing mechanization and automation, and creating new uses for U.S. commodities, including bio-based products and bioenergy. The strategy also highlights protecting American agriculture from invasive pests and diseases, promoting soil health and water use efficiency, and improving human health through precision nutrition and higher quality food. Administration officials say the new approach moves away from previous research priorities tied to DEI and environmental justice, arguing those efforts divert resources from real-world challenges facing producers. Secretary Rollins says the updated research roadmap builds on the Land-Grant University System's legacy of innovation and is designed to keep U.S. farmers competitive while ensuring a safe, abundant, and affordable food supply for consumers. Happy New Year's Eve, everyone. I'm Lane Nordlund.
You're listening to Montana Talks, bringing truth and freedom to Montana. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
All right, back again with Jody Etchart. What is your next topic on the table with healthcare?
So I want to just mention the Rural Transformation Fund and really, truly, what an incredible job our DPHHS did with getting money from Montana. They had to fill out an application just like every other state did. They had about 6 weeks to get this application in by November 5th. And this is literally going at lightning speed. So with the Rural Transformation Fund and the One Big Beautiful Bill, states had to have their proposal in. Montana's is a 60-page proposal. It's on the DPHHS website in case any of you want to look at it. But We did great. We got $233 million per year, which one of our senators, Democrat senators out of Bozeman, said that that's a Band-Aid from the feds. It's not a Band-Aid. She's the only one saying that, and I'm not even going to grace her with the privilege of saying her name. I think that that's a disgrace to say that $233 million to prop up rural Montana and rural healthcare in Montana is a disgrace. It's not. When you have multiple people praising it, different tribal leaders praising it, the Montana Hospital Association praising it, that's an amazing amount of money. And I said earlier, it's about $1.3 billion over 5 years. But I'm happy to talk about the different areas that DPHHS covered in order to ensure that money to Montana. We got the fourth largest payout of all the states.
Wow. That is impressive, particularly with our low population here. How did they manage to do that?
Because they did an excellent job in the little amount of time that they had. And really, our DPHHS and Director Charlie Brereton and the people that work with him need to be praised for this. They went on five areas that they talked about with that the Rural Transformation Fund: workforce development, facility sustainability, innovative patient care and payment models for value-based Medicaid contracts. And so this goes back to what we talked about last with the midterms and the shift. I think this is going to change because you have the federal government talking about value-based Medicaid contracts. So then, in other words, if you decrease chronic disease, you decrease diabetes, you decrease obesity, you decrease smoking, you have value-based care, you're going to get higher payments. So it's going to change. It's going to change, John. We're going to do this. The other one's then technology development, EMR modernization, telehealth and remote monitoring, buying ambulances for people. This isn't unfunded mandates. This is one-time spending for critical infrastructure that people need. Laurel right now, their EMS services in Laurel, needs a new ambulance because their ambulance is old, and they have done an amazing job keeping it together. But they're getting a new ambulance, the cost of a new ambulance, and then not only the cost of the ambulance, but then supplying everything that you need in the ambulance, the stretchers and all that kind of thing. This Rural Transformation Fund award to the state of Montana is going to help small ambulance services, which we desperately need help in the state of Montana.
I think as a fiscal conservative, the question I always ask is, okay, you and I are too young to know this, but wasn't there a time in our history where hospitals were private enterprises and doctors were in private practice and we didn't have the federal government and our tax dollars all the way up in the middle of this, and constantly with federal dollars and all that come federal regulations, which ends up mucking it all up. And it once again, it's the blob. The blob never stops. Why can't we have, if Lowe's and Walmart, if they have to, and they can obviously sustain themselves with their business model, why can't hospitals and doctors sustain themselves without our tax dollars?
Low insurance payments, and then the insurance company getting massive premiums and paying out a little bit of money to benefit their shareholders, which is the business model they have, because insurance companies have a better business model than the hospitals, who don't stick up for themselves and negotiate a good contract.
And then, of course, it's our, I think you're walking right into probably one of the answers right there. Is this because of the insurance company's lobby with our politicians and the hospital's lobby with our politicians? Would I be right on that?
Yes. Like I said earlier, when we were talking about the pharmacy benefit management bill, I literally think that those pharmaceutical the insurance companies, Blue Cross Blue Shield, they hired, I think there were maybe only, well, there was a handful of lobbyists. They hired every lobbyist there to push that pharmacy benefit management because they're going to lose $2 billion alone for the state of Montana. And what was it, $460 billion annually in 2023 that they made? It's massive money. Of course, they're going to hire lobbyists.
And it's that's just... There's a large part of us out here. We saw, you know, going through the Biden time and then, you know, reelecting Trump. There's a big portion out there of the conservative base that I think are just saying, we're not fixing this. The whole thing, and that's all of it, has just got to get torn down to the floorboards and start over, because right now, all it does, the blob, just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It's like nobody we send up there to D.C. does anything about it. They all say they're going to do something about it. But what does it do? It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger every year. And, you know, I'm watching this now as a hobby for 33 years and doing it full time for 10. And it just never stops.
Nope, you're right. It never does. But I think people are tired of it now because literally healthcare is getting to be completely out of reach, despite the fact that we have Obamacare, which was supposed to fix everything. It's made it even worse. And people are seeing it now. People are seeing it. They're seeing that insurance companies are making massive amounts of money, that their deductibles are skyrocketing, that they can't afford prescriptions. But yet, I want to point out alldaychemist.com. You can get inhalers for, like I told you, a Symbicort inhaler, you can get 6 months worth for about $126 versus the $300 to $600 it would cost you for 1 month in the United States. It's just sick. And guess what? You don't need a prescription either.
You were talking something earlier, and we glossed right over it, that I hadn't heard about, that you were saying here in Montana now there's a new way where you pay monthly to, you said direct pay or something
direct
like that?
Direct primary care.
Yeah. Tell everybody about that again.
So I know that there's several direct primary care companies here in Billings, but you just pay a modest fee and you can buy a different plan. And what that does is it buys you certain things throughout the year and a certain number of visits and being able to get right away with your provider for annual exams and things. And you just pay them monthly for care. And different tiers would cover your blood work and your annual exam, just different things like that. So because they do blood work oftentimes in their office, or they have a contract with an external company where they pay cash for those services, so blood work is so much cheaper than if you went through your insurance, because the insurance rate for the blood work, you've seen it on X and different things about when somebody calls and they say, hey, I want to pay cash for my MRI.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's $600, and then you go and get it billed through your insurance, and they bill your insurance $2,500, but then your insurance only pays $800 on it.
Yeah.
It's a racket, and that's where Trump's pricing transparency comes in. If I go get my oil changed, I want to know how much my oil is at company B, C, and D, and I'm going to pick the cheapest one that's going to do the best price to change my oil, and I want to know how much it is. But in healthcare, it's almost impossible to figure out how much something is. And the reason it is because the hospitals have so many different contracts with so many different insurance companies. They really can't tell you what a cost of anything is, because for one blood draw, they're going to bill differently based on the contract that they have with how many different insurance companies and payers. It's ridiculous. So honestly, that's a difficult thing for the hospitals to do because of the different contracts that they have. And that's the insurance company problem again.
Direct primary care, of course, that's not going to cover a major thing like a broken bone, an operation, anything like that. It's just for basic stuff?
Yes.
Okay. And then if that's all you had and you don't have another backup insurance policy, then what happens when you have one of those, a broken bone or something like that?
Well, let's hope that you would have a catastrophic health care plan that could help you pay for that. Otherwise, you just have to work out payments through the hospital.
Okay, yeah. I tell you where I really soured on hospitals was, I think, a lot of people was during COVID. Because when I saw right here in Montana these local health officers taking their, these county health officers taking their marching orders right from the hospitals. And of course, the hospitals were telling them, you know, keep everything closed down and mask and get your jab and all that. They were the agents of our incarceration that whole time. That's when I was like, oh, these guys are in on the scam with the rest of them. I think if you were paying attention, I think it soured a lot of people.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
We've got some messages here from listeners. First, we got Morgan in Helena. Morgan says, SB354 died in the House in 2025. It was to prohibit soda and candy on EBT. Does Jody have any insight as to why?
Thank you so much for that question, Morgan. So, first of all, it goes back again to effective lobbying. And the other thing, the argument that they said was that it's going to be too difficult for all of the stores to decide which could be sold and couldn't be sold. And so they really just went into the weeds on it. Okay, you can't have chocolate. Okay, so somebody can't buy chocolate chips to make chocolate chip cookies. I really think that that's not correct. And also, when they're already doing it in other states and at the federal level, those codes, the scan codes that you scan, those really shouldn't be that difficult to put in with what people can't buy. So it was that argument that's going to be way too hard and too much of a burden on the local stores. And the other argument was, this is a free country. It's free to be able for somebody to be able to go buy a pop if they want a pop. They should be able to buy a pop and a bag of Doritos if they're out. And you can't keep that from people. So the arguments were ridiculous, but it died.
It's a free country. And, you know, if you're paying for it with your money, you know, how is it a free country for you to go buy whatever you want with my money? You know, it must be that I was thinking, you know, you were saying the lobbyists, it's got to be those folks from Big Soda and Big Candy, right?
Oh, it absolutely was. It really was a very effective lobby with a very effective, and there were two bills, one by Representative Sherry Esman and one by Senator Daniel Zolnikoff. And they're both very good bills, and there's no reason that they shouldn't have passed. There's absolutely no reason. You don't need to eat a Dorito, and you don't need to drink a Coke or a Pepsi. You don't need to have a Dr. Pepper. You can have water. Did you know water's free?
They say that. I don't know about clean water, but you know, like they have these churches like there in, I know in North Carolina that do food for the poor, and what they have are the staples, right? For proteins, carbohydrates. That's it. They don't have any of those sweets and candies and, you know, the sodas and all of that. It's the basic things for a balanced diet, and that's it. It's none of the, like they say, the licky chewies out there that we're having to pay for. That's what was coming up too. I remember in all of the debate during the shutdown, the big shutdown, because that's when all the EBT benefits, that's when everybody were freaking out about their EBT benefits. All of that was coming up. But, of course, that's yet another one of those things that nobody wanted to touch. Even the Trump administration, you know, they were going out of their way to make sure that money got out there because, oh, my God, can't touch that, right? Even when it's being scammed again, just like all of our benefits are, oh, it can't touch that. Let's see, we got another message here. We got Cameron in Billings. starting to sound like the issue is with insurance companies. I wonder what healthcare would look like without predatory practices in our healthcare fields. Yeah, that's, I think that's a bingo right there, isn't it, Jody?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I will, working at a hospital, yes, but I can stick up for the hospitals, the regulations, everything that they have to go through for the feds, everything that they have to go to keep all the insurance companies. Hospitals are there to take care of people. And this is not a criticism of them, but they're not there to negotiate contracts with insurance companies. They're there to care for people. And the insurance companies do a great job of it, and they just run them over. We just need to let hospitals care for people. We need to let the people in the hospitals care for people. We have two exceptional healthcare facilities in Billings that do. It's the people that are there that make those healthcare facilities exceptional. It's not necessarily the healthcare facility itself. It's how they enable and facilitate the people caring for the patients. And then they have to fight the insurance companies. They have to fight federal regulations. I mean, just the one with the one I talked about earlier about the definition of provider. And I can't order pulmonary rehab for somebody that's proven to keep that person from a readmission to the hospital. That's just dumb. It's dumb. And actually, I'm trying to work with Senator Sheehy's office to have him carry a bill and sponsor a bill to change that definition specifically for hospice care, because people in end-of-life care shouldn't have to wait for a doctor when they have a qualified nurse practitioner or physician assistant to care for them.
Oh, that's got to get done for sure. Yeah, hopefully you could get that done at least here in the state of Montana. Is that your next thing up on the plate?
It's federal. Has to be changed to the federal level.
Can't be done on the state level, huh?
Nope, because it's typically folks that are on hospice have Medicare or Medicaid, typically. So we could do it for insurance. We could do it for the ERISA plans, or we could do it for the self-funded plans in the state of Montana, but couldn't do anything with Medicare and Medicaid. And that's where your big impact come from.
And now that's the other thing we talked about. We've talked about a lot with the filibuster and with the radicalization of both parties, is now you're not getting anything done. And bipartisanship is absolutely over, because neither party wants to be seen as in any way giving a win to the other side, because that would help them in the next election, right? So nothing, even the good stuff that could happen, doesn't get done because we can't give the other side a win. Well, guys, that is the end of our program, and we got tomorrow is New Year's Day. Happy New Year, everybody. It's been great being with you guys this week. This is John Jackson with Jody Etchart, and we will see you all next week. Have a good one.